Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life is songs of grief with the yellow fear and fear the size.
Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer dude and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude still.
Still just a dude.
Stillin' and chillin'.
Well, we're in week 27 of the pandemic, I think.
Or is it year 27, it feels like?
I don't know. It could be either one.
I know. It's just time has stood still.
But I did see one interesting thing about West Virginia and on some of the different models, they're showing that there are four states that could actually kind of open back up earlier than the others, and West Virginia is one of them.
Ding, 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 ding. Hooray for us. We get to be the guinea pigs and run back out.
I know, right? It's probably just because of the low numbers we've had and our population density is not very high. So
right. Yeah, we practice social distancing already. We stay away from each other. but here's another thing. I read an article today that it might explain some of it. You know, this thing, one of the worst things that it does is attack the lungs. So with us being the state with the highest per capita cigarette smokers, you'd think that we would be particularly hard hit. However,
yeah, you would think so.
Yeah. But however, we're not. I mean, we have the not the lowest deaths, but almost the lowest deaths. I think we're up to 29 total, something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty low, and we're still below 1,000 cases, I think, here. So
yeah, and but I read an article today that, you know, it has already gone through France. They've already had their peak, and they're going back at poking their heads out the doors and going back out. So they're able to do some study on what happened there. And they found that smokers were four times less likely to contract the coronavirus.
Really?
Yeah. And you would
wonder why.
Well, you'd think it'd be just the opposite. That's counterintuitive to what you'd think. But they think it has to do with nicotine. That nicotine somehow causes something that counteracts it. So they're recommending that people might want to get nicotine patches to wear as they go back out.
Well, I mean, I'm not addicted to nicotine, but I mean, if it keeps me from getting the coronavirus, I guess I'd wear a nicotine patch.
Yeah, same here. I've never smoked in my life, but if it kept me from getting it, I would put one on.
Maybe I'll have to start dipping or chewing like everybody else here in West Virginia.
No, I wouldn't do that. I'd rather catch the coronavirus than do that.
Yeah, just a little pinch between your cheek and gum there, just enough to keep the coronavirus away.
All right, Walt.
Where's Walt?
I knew you were going to ask that. You don't remember Walt Garrison? He used to play for the Cowboys. He was like a fullback, and he used to do a commercial because he was a real cowboy, and he would do a commercial, just a little pinch between your cheek and gum. Old Walt Garrison.
That's probably where that comes from, is that ad. I'd never heard it before.
Yeah, he was pretty famous in the days back when the Cowboys used to play in Super Bowls.
Oh, that's ancient history.
Roger Staubach and Calvin Hill and Drew Pearson.
Well, the draft is coming on tonight. That's kind of exciting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We don't have any local boys to look at going in there, though. Used to be we put them in there all the time, but not with old Doc Holliday at the helm. We don't get any pro players anymore.
I read a funny story because, you know, Tom Brady has been traded down to Tampa Bay now.
Right, and Gronk's coming with him.
He is, and Byron Leftwich is the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
The former Marshall quarterback. And evidently, Tom Brady was going over to Byron Leftwich's house to pick up the offensive playbook so he could start studying it. And he just walked in the door. Only problem was he walked in the neighbor's door.
Yeah.
So, did you see that article?
I saw it. I didn't read it. I did see where it said Tom Brady walks in the wrong house.
Yeah, Tom Brady actually accidentally home invaded somebody and then said, wait a second, is this Byron's house? And like, no, he's next door.
Well, I didn't know it was Byron he was going to see. I did see he went in the wrong place. But what would you think if somebody walked to your house and said, it's Tom Brady. Hey, what do you know? That's like when we were building our new house and Troy Brown walked in on us. And it's like, oh, hi, Troy Brown. Super Bowl ring owner with the New England Patriots and a former Marshall standout wide receiver.
Well, we could talk about Marshall football, but I think we probably should get on to our topic.
Yeah, that'd probably be a good idea.
In the we're so sports starved though, we're trying to find anything to talk about.
Yeah, well, they're just replaying old stuff, and there's nothing to talk about. They just show stuff from back in the past now.
Well, Salem and I watched Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals from 1986 with Michael Jordan against Larry Bird. We watched that thing from start to finish the other day.
Well, that's a classic. That's worth watching.
I usually can't sit down and watch old games like that, but I mean, I guess where I just haven't watched any sports at all, I was kind of starved for it, and I was really into it.
Well, and I'm sure, I mean, that being that old, you didn't remember who won anyway, so it's just like new.
No, actually, I did know who won because I'd watched the Last Dance documentary on ESPN, they had talked about that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I'm going to have to watch that at some point, but I haven't gotten around to it yet.
Oh, it is must-see TV.
Yeah.
Certainly. Well, this episode, we saw an interesting headline, and the great state of Missouri, the Show Me State, is suing China over the coronavirus.
Good for them. Yeah.
And that brought up a lot of interesting legal arguments. And you know me, I always like an interesting legal argument.
Well, being a lawyer, that's good.
Well, I think I like defense work more because I'm always better at kind of analyzing why things won't work and tearing things down and poking holes in things. I was always better at that, I guess. I guess maybe I was kind of a destructive kid growing up. I don't know.
Well, only to yourself, as I remember riding over ramps and stuff.
Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt announced on Tuesday that he had filed a civil lawsuit in a federal court in the Eastern District of Missouri. I'm not sure the case is going to go that far, but, you know, it's great publicity. And you know what AG stands for, don't you?
Attorney General.
Not Attorney General. It stands for Aspiring Governor.
Oh, I see. So he's grandstanding, huh?
I think it has a bit of a publicity type stunt to it as well.
Hmm.
But, and also, I think Missouri was one of the last states to kind of acknowledge the pandemic going on and things like that. And maybe they might end up being hit pretty hard. So they're probably looking to point the finger at somebody else a little bit as well, I would think. Now, the 47-page complaint, it actually reads a little bit like a spy thriller from the get-go. It's riveting reading. It's got such phrases like this. I'm going to read a little bit from it.
All right, I'll be listening.
The state of Missouri seeks to recover for the enormous loss of life, human suffering, and economic turmoil experienced by all Missourians from COVID-19 pandemic that has disrupted the entire world. An appalling campaign of deceit, concealment, misfeasance, and inaction by Chinese authorities unleashed this pandemic. During the critical weeks of the initial outbreak, Chinese authorities deceived the public, suppressed crucial information, arrested whistleblowers, denied human-to-human transmission in the face of mounting evidence, destroyed critical medical research, permitted millions of people to be exposed to the virus, and even hoarded personal protective equipment, thus causing a global pandemic that was unnecessary and preventable. Defendants are responsible for the enormous death, suffering, and economic loss they inflicted on the world, including Missourians, and they should be held accountable.
Well, that's quite well written and probably fairly accurate.
I mean, it's a pretty strong paragraph. There's also some lines further on. I like this one. The virus unleashed by the Communist Party of China and the Chinese government has left no community in the world untouched. They're using a lot of dramatic words.
Well, I can just see the people there in Tiananmen Square or wherever it is that their headquarters is, and they're like, oh, no, we're getting sued. What do you mean we're getting sued? Yeah, Missouri's suing us. Missouri? Oh, no. And that we better worry now. It'd be just like the Russians when they indicted all those people for their cyber hacking during our election. And they indicted all of them and wanted them to send them to us to stay in trial. And they're there. Oh, sure, comrade. We send you people right there. You just hold your breath. Ha, 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 ha. You're not ever going to see those guys.
Probably not. They follow up in paragraph 6 with this one, too. This COVID-19 pandemic is the direct result of a sinister campaign of malfeasance and deception carried out by the defendants. So they are definitely going for the flair for the dramatic with it. The people they are suing is not only the Chinese government. They're suing the Chinese Communist Party. They're suing the Wuhan Research Laboratory. They're suing all the different branches of government that are there that are possibly part of this. I mean, there are a lot of defendants in this.
Well, you know, there for a while, I'm not much of one for these conspiracy theories. I always think that's a bunch of gobbledygook, that most everything, keep it simple, you know. It probably happened as just a bad stroke of luck, just like in that movie Contagion, you know. But there's a lot of information that looks pretty suspicious when you look at there was a lab that's right there in that Wuhan district, and it's within like 4 blocks of where their Chinese CDC is, and that marketplace where it supposedly came out of is right there in the middle in between the two of them. And they did have people working on research concerning bat viruses. So
yeah, I don't
think they made it and turned it loose, but I think it's very possible that one of them maybe didn't practice correct safety procedures and tracked it out of the building.
Yeah, and I don't know that we're ever going to get to the bottom of what took place.
No.
We may, but I doubt it.
No, we never will. They'll never come clean with that.
Now, the AG for Missouri is suing under the doctrine of parens patriae, which is Latin and literally means parent of the country. So the government as legal protector of the citizens. So that's kind of the legal theory that they're doing it. They're initiating this lawsuit on behalf of all Missourians.
Okay. Well, that's who they represent, so that's well.
It is, but that's the Latin term for it. The filing also outlines how officials initially cracked down on medical professionals who posted information about the virus. So they're kind of outlining some of the different doctors who tried to post different things about the illness with different medical school alumni groups that they were part of. The one doctor who did it, Dr. Wen Liang, actually later died of the virus too, which is kind of sad.
I remember I saw that on the news.
Yeah, they were really trying to crack down on, you know, anybody getting the information out, which, you know, if you're looking at somebody who's guilty, I mean, that usually where there's smoke like that, there's fire, for lack of a better colloquialism.
Well, it made me think, I saw something last night on a movie I was watching that made me think of that exact same thing. The movie I saw was the first Purge.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the first one in the series. It was the latest one in the series, but it's called The First Purge.
They're really out to confuse people with that title.
I know. That's what I had to keep explaining. But the lady that supposedly thought up the whole idea, the doctor behind the purge, when she found out they were using it for other reasons, she said, well, I'm going to go tell everybody. Well, it ended up they grabbed her, they took her out, and they threw her out in the middle of the purge, which, of course, she got purged. So yeah. It kind of made me feel that's what happened to that doctor. He said, hey, look what's going on with this research. And they said, oh, well, we'll show you what's going on with it. And they exposed him to it and let him die.
Here's your firsthand knowledge of it.
Yeah, that's right. We'll let you study it while it's in you.
So part of any lawsuit that you have, you generally have to prove damages. Because you can make all these allegations, but the bottom line is, lawsuits typically address dollars and cents, so that's kind of how you show damages and how you make somebody whole again in our system. And they actually have an interesting argument to try to prove what their damages are. They say in the complaint, before the pandemic, Missouri had one of the lowest unemployment rates of the past decade, but upon information and belief, Missouri's unemployment rate is now the highest it has been since the Great Depression. Responding to the pandemic has required shutting down businesses, disrupting ordinary production and trade, and dislocating workers. So they're saying that all the economic downturn that Missouri is facing now is a direct result of all the different acts that China committed or failed to take adequate steps toward preventing the spread of the pandemic. So kind of an interesting theory or interesting idea to prove your damages.
Well, I would think you could also probably throw in damages for the amount of PPE they had to buy and the hospital staff overtime and all kinds of other stuff that's involved.
Oh yeah, probably. But I mean, the economic realization of the unemployment and all that, I think, is a very cognizant type thing that you can put into a complaint. And also, the people that become unemployed because of this, they're going to read that and think, hey, this AG is really sticking up for us.
Yeah, but that's good from that standpoint. The only bad part about it is you see a lot of articles where they're saying that there is like people try to get vengeance against Chinese Americans that are here because they blame them for the virus. So it's not a Chinese bashing thing that we don't want to get started. That's not good.
No. And, you know, honestly, the complaint, they do take kind of a very interesting approach to who they are suing, because there are some barriers to suing a foreign government, which I'm going to get into, but they actually kind of thought out about how they were going to get around this a little bit, too. But before we get into that, I think there might be a motion today that we have before the court.
Why, yes, if it pleases your courtship of Eddie's father, we would like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right. I'll leave it to Beaver. Who do we have on the docket, Tommy?
We have on the docket, back with us again this week, Skylight Frames.
You know, it is hard to find the perfect Mother's Day gift. You want to find something that is perfect for that mother out there. But what do? Especially in a time like this when there aren't shops aren't as open as much and you're trying to shop, but you can't go somewhere and walk around and aimlessly and try to find it. What do you do?
Well, that's where Skylight Frame comes in. And that's why we like it so much. Its touchscreen photo frame makes it so that you can email photos to it, and they appear in seconds. So mom or whoever can see your favorite moments.
And if you live far away from your mom, then it can be a real struggle to try to stay connected. But after you get her a Skylight Frame, you're able to send the photos almost every day. It's a great way for somebody to see what's going on.
And not just you, but multiple people can send pictures to the frame. So it's a great way to keep large network of friends and families in touch.
And if you're worried that it's complicated, it's not. It sets up effortlessly in under 60 seconds. You just plug it in and use the touchscreen to connect to your wireless network and enjoy.
It has a black frame, so it looks like a real photo frame that adds a beautiful touch to your home. And Skylight Frame has a gorgeous 10-inch touchscreen. You can swipe through photos with your finger and even tap to thank the person who sent a photo.
And there is 100% satisfaction guaranteed. If you don't love your Skylight, they'll offer you a full refund.
A full refund. Not a half refund. A full refund.
It's so simple that even non-tech savvy people can set it up and use it.
That means me. You know, this is such an isolating time as We're just trying to keep our loved ones safe and healthy, and Skylight Frame can give each other a little glimpse of what's going on in our daily lives.
And right now, there's a special holiday offer. You can get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com and enter the code COURT.
That's right. To get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame, just go to skylightframe.com and enter code COURT. Court.
That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com and code court.
And Mike and Tommy say, can you picture this? Get it, Mike? I get it.
Now, there are going to be some issues for Missouri bringing this action against China. And the main issue to bringing this is the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act, also known as the acronym FSIA, of 1976.
Oh, yeah, FSIA.
And this is a law that was obviously passed in 1976. That's not just some random number. And
that was a very good year. That was the year I graduated high school.
It was pretty much the year I came into existence.
That's true.
I was here in 75, but not for long.
Just for a few hours.
And the Foreign Sovereigns Immunity Act is based on the theory of sovereign immunity, as you might have figured out.
Is that like how diplomats have immunity from prosecution and stuff?
Kind of similar, but not really.
Okay. Well, never mind. Disregard. Wave it off.
Sovereign immunity traces its origins from English common law, which most of our law does. And it is the doctrine that the sovereign or the government cannot commit a legal wrong and is therefore immune from civil suit or criminal prosecution.
Boy, is that a misstatement.
Yeah. And the theory is that, you know, you don't want your governments being sued for just anything. You need to have very kind of some controls for it to make sure it's not, the government's not drug into court all the time. And so that's why this kind of came into place. And, you know, it may have something to do with the diplomats. I tend to think that's probably has more to do with treaties and whatnot between the president and different countries. But that might play into it a little bit the more I think about it. So you might be onto something there.
Well, and if I remember right, I mean, it just makes sense because we can't sue the U.S. government unless they allow us to.
That's true. Yeah.
So why do you think you can sue another country unless they let you sue them?
The Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act is pretty much a jurisdictional statute. So for the most part, it indicates what conditions must be met in order for a lawsuit against a foreign state to be instituted, not what conduct by the foreign sovereign is actionable. So it has to do not so much as to what they do, but, you know, are you allowed to bring them in? If a foreign defendant qualifies as a foreign state under the FSIA, the Act provides that it shall be immune to suit in any U.S. court, federal or state, unless a statutory exception to immunity applies. The applicability of an exception to immunity is a matter of subject matter jurisdiction, which is a topic we've talked about before, meaning if there is no exception to immunity, a court cannot hear the claim and must dismiss the suit. So if there's no subject matter jurisdiction, you can't have a case. And the only way you can have a case with proper subject matter jurisdiction under the FSIA is if it meets one of the exceptions. And there are not a lot of them. There's just a few.
I thought there was just two. Is there more than two?
I believe there's more than two. I think there might be three or four.
Oh, okay.
So the way this generally works is the plaintiff files the lawsuit, their complaint. Usually it's some sort of nice writing like the Attorney General of Missouri just filed.
Yeah.
And so you file the lawsuit. And once it's filed, and then you have to serve them with a copy of it like you would anybody else. And when you serve somebody who is out of state, you have to use what's called some sort of long-arm statute. And I imagine for suing a foreign entity like this, it has to be an extra long-arm statute.
Really long-arm. I have long arms. The guys playing I used to play basketball with would always say, damn your long arms.
So I don't know who they served with this. That'd be kind of an interesting question, too, if you're looking at the legality of it. They might be able to serve whoever is the diplomat that's closest there to Missouri. I don't know. So it'd be interesting to figure out who they actually did serve.
I could see somebody walk in and say, you're the president of China. You've been served.
You might not walk out of there.
I don't think you'd ever walk in. You'd never get that far.
So once the plaintiff files the lawsuit, the defendant state has to prove that it is a foreign state. So the defendant's got to say, look, I'm a country. I'm a foreign state. You can't sue me under the FSIA. Once the defendant does this, the plaintiff then has to show what exception applies and why the court can hear it. So you kind of got some burden shifting going back and forth there. First, the burden's on the plaintiff to file it. The burden shifts to the defendant to say you're a state entity. Then it shifts back to the plaintiff to show why there is subject matter jurisdiction, why the court can hear this case. Okay. And as I said, there are some exceptions, but not really a whole bunch of them. The lawsuit that we're talking about, the Missouri one, seems to be filed under the commercial activity exception. So if a foreign government is affecting commercial activity in the state or they're committing commercial activity in the state, then that could be one of the exceptions for them under the FSIA, where there would be proper subject matter jurisdiction. I think the problem with this is that I think it's kind of a tenuous argument. I don't necessarily think it meets the criteria. And based upon some quick research I did, I think there's been some case law which kind of says, I don't really think this is the kind of exception we're looking for to allow you to sue a foreign entity.
Well, I think the whole United States should sue them instead of just Missouri. We all died a little in that damn war.
That's right, Josie. Well, I mean, they're just trying to take him for what we call around here, Missouri boat ride.
That's right. They won't get it. They won't get all of us. They might pick off a few up front, but.
So as I said, I don't know that this exception that they're going to try to argue is really going to work for them, but they have another interesting idea. And this is the fact that the wrongful acts were committed by the Communist Party of China and not the actual government, and therefore it is not a foreign entity and not a state actor under the FSIA. So it's kind of an interesting theory, because the way the FSIA is written, it's for a foreign government, but they're suing the Communist Party.
So are you saying it'd be like if somebody sued the Republican Party or the Democrat Party here?
I think that's what they're trying to make it similar to, but the problem is there's not different parties over there.
They always win.
Well, the president, there's some theory that some people would say that the president of China should not be called the president. The president of China should be like the
king or dictator, whatever.
Not the king or the dictator, but the person in charge of the Communist Party, like a president, not a president of the country, but president of the Communist Party, and therefore the person in charge of the country, because they're the ruling party in the country, if that makes sense.
Well, you can make the same argument for Russia, but old Putin, you call him whatever you want, but he's still in charge. Well, he doesn't have much opposition either.
They still pretend to have elections, I think.
Yeah, they pretend to.
But, and there's also some case law out there decided by some different federal district courts, which says that you can't circumvent the FSIA by suing these quasi-governmental foreign entities either. Because this isn't the first time people have tried to get around this. Because, whenever you have a statute that limits subject matter jurisdiction, there's always people that want to try to push the envelope of it and try to make it fit their case in particular. So I don't necessarily think it's going to prevail under this theory either. But I do think it's kind of interesting the way they drafted it to not only sue the Chinese government, but also sue the Communist Party, to sue the lab there that was in Wuhan, to sue different governmental entities and whatnot that might have had some hand in covering this up or not doing what they should have done. So for all intents and purposes, I think it's intents and purposes, isn't it?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Not intensive purposes.
Intents and purposes.
That's right. For all intents and purposes, I think that it's kind of a melodramatic complaint, but it does touch on some interesting legal theories that were probably pretty well thought out and really trying to make the case actually work. So,
well, I can tell you this, if for some reason it actually worked, I can think of 49 other entities that would jump on that bandwagon.
Oh, certainly. I read an article by Shimon Keitner, and I think that's how you pronounce her name. She is a law professor, and she summed it up pretty well with this quote, and I thought this was really kind of good. In sum, although it is possible that the intricacies of the commercial activity exception might tempt a district court to allow a very limited jurisdictional discovery, the gravamen of the complaint is that the Chinese government, acting outside the United States, breached its international obligations with disastrous consequences for the rest of the world. The FSIA does not provide jurisdiction over these claims. So I thought that kind of summed it up well, that, it's a interesting theory, but probably falls a little short. Now, one word I used in there, gravamen. Do you know what that is?
Gravamen. Is that what you said?
Gravamen. No
gravamen.
T. Yep.
That sounds like how important it is.
Well, it goes to the essence or the most serious part of the complaint, kind of the heart of the matter. Mm-hmm. So whenever you hear somebody talk about the gravamen of something, they're talking about the heart of the matter.
Well, that's kind of what I said, how important it is. I was relating it to gravity, the gravity of the situation.
That's right. They use that a lot when they're talking about what a complaint's really about and whatnot. That's a very legal term that attorneys like to use a lot. So I thought I'd let you know, cue you in on that, let you know what it is.
Oh, well, thanks.
You're welcome. Well, and while I was researching this, I actually saw that it looks like Mississippi is planning on filing a lawsuit against China as well pretty soon. So I think you're right. Everybody is jumping on that bandwagon.
Yeah. If they see the light of day and there's money involved, it's just like those opioid lawsuits. When people started suing, the states started suing those drug manufacturers. Now you got cities that are suing them. Even though the state might have got money, now the cities are suing them. So they're trying to settle all those, or there's a lot of them are saying, well, we'll just declare bankruptcy if you all keep suing us.
Yeah.
So you won't get anything anyway. So there, ha! And by the way, diplomats are immune to suit over their official duties under the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations, which has 190 signatories.
Ah, okay. So it's similar to that, the FSIA, but actually not really the exact same thing.
It's a Vienna Convention. We always quote that when we were playing war growing up as kids. You can't torture me. The Vienna Convention says you can't torture me.
I thought it was the Geneva Convention.
Oh, well, I guess it was. Was that a different convention?
I think it was.
Was that the next year?
Yeah, that was
they had it in Geneva. Yeah, they had it in Geneva one year. They had it in Vienna. And then it became Comic-Con.
That's how it goes.
I was confused. I was thinking, Vienna Convention. That's that one we always quote about, you can't torture me. But that's the Geneva one, huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, at least according,
you're right.
According to my recollection for Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah, well, that's where you always heard about it, in Hogan's Heroes. Anybody who hadn't seen that, you've missed something.
Oh, Hogan's Heroes?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a sub shop in Gainesville, Florida, and it had like a World War II theme thing. It was called Hogan's. Hogan's was the name of it, but I think at one point it was actually called Hogan's Heroes, and I think they may have been sued. But they had some really good subs in there, and also some nice craft beer.
I had an old Uncle Billy lived down in Louisiana on the bayou, and whenever we go down and visit him in the summers and they'd be playing cards, whenever he had the win in hand, he'd throw it down on the table and yell, Hogan's Goat!
Hogan's Goat?
Yeah, I don't know what that meant, but it cracked me up when I was a kid. And every time he'd throw it down there and say, Hogan's Goat! I'd just roll on the floor and laugh. Old Uncle Billy, he was a character.
Yeah, I always like to hear the Uncle Billy stories.
Well, you know, there was an act that was passed back in Obama era that was the Justice Against Sponsors of Terrorism Act. And it said that you could file lawsuits against people that caused you damages due to acts of terrorism. And I think it came about as a result from people wanting to sue over 9/11.
Yeah.
So Obama was not in favor of it, it said, because he was afraid of what reverse actions would come against us if other countries started deeming things that we did acts of terrorism and said, well, look, if you think it's okay to sue us, then we can sue you.
Well, and that's another argument for the FSIA as to why it's actually good and why we don't want to expand it very much, is because if we expand it, then that means the other countries can expand it against us too.
Yeah.
So we're kind of happy, I think, in the United States, leaving everything as is.
So you don't think they're going to get any traction on that or any help from the government to do that, the federal government?
I do not think so. Although there has been some litigation, not litigation, but...
consideration? Emancipation. Anticipation.
There has been some talk from different senators about introducing different legislation, trying to amend the FSIA to allow something for this exact scenario, just because of the pandemic that took place. But a lot of people think that sets a dangerous situation, because you're opening up the door to every time there's an instance like this, you amend it to allow lawsuits. And if you do that, then you're gutting the purpose of the FSIA, which in turn, other countries can turn around and do that against us too. So, you know, I don't know that's a good idea either.
Well, maybe what we should do is just say, look, China, you either pay us for these damages or we're going to quit buying all this crap from you and we're going to start making our own stuff here in America instead of letting you make it for us. What if we said that?
That would be like throwing a rock at them, probably. I don't know. I don't think we can boil it down to simplistic terms.
Yeah, I don't think they'd really flinch at that. Okay, no, go ahead. You pull out of our factories. There's plenty more to move in.
Yeah, and I think part of the problem too is that even if our suspicions are correct as to what took place, there was some cover up and all this. I don't know how you're ever going to prove it. We're never going to get to the heart of it. We're never going to find out actually what took place, I don't think, absent some astounding whistleblower who comes forward from China and has some sort of amazing, irrefutable type evidence. It's just not going to happen. So,
Nah, it won't.
Yeah. Now, you said there was somebody else, a guy from Miami, a Florida man who's suing France?
That's correct. He's suing France over a disputed domain name, which he believes was unfairly seized after more than 20 years of ownership. So French-born Jean-Noël Friedman is suing the country for cyber squatting on the France.com domain name. It said the site was first registered in 1994, but was seized by French authorities in March after a three-year court battle. Friedman claimed that the domain is worth millions of dollars per year and that it was taken without warning or compensation. He said he spent two decades building this site, which was conceived as a digital kiosk for, I never heard of these, Francophiles in the U.S. I guess people that have a thing about France.
Yeah.
The first website included information on French culture and a section on travel to the country. A new website has been set up to chart the history of the France.com page, which Friedman said was developed in constant partnership with various entities and branches of the French government, who are not only aware of France.com's existence, but consistently encouraged and supported its initiatives and activities. For 22 years, we promoted France, Friedman told Newsweek. Our efforts ended up sending tens of millions of dollars to France. In 2015, the French government launched proceedings in France to acquire the domain name, claiming Friedman had created it in bad faith and was not authorized by the state to use it. Friedman said the challenge is not only groundless and absurd, it's entirely dishonest. He claimed France has no exclusive right to the name France in the U.S. After a Paris appeals court supported the government's position, which of course they would, the web.com company transferred ownership to the country's Ministry of Foreign Affairs in March of 2018. Friedman said he was given no warning and no compensation. He said, I've never been treated like that by any company anywhere in the world. If it happened to me, it can happen to anyone, Friedman told Ars Techna. The France.com URL now redirects to the English version of the state tourism France, tourismfrance.fr site. It's 100% of our traffic, of our revenue. It's everything, Friedman told Newsweek. It has destroyed 20 years of investment, of goodwill, of work. In response, a lawsuit filed by Friedman accused France of cyber squatting and reverse domain name hijacking. The suit was filed in Virginia and names the French Republic government tourist agency About France, the country's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian, and internet company Versign as defendants. The suit says the defendants misused the French judicial system to seize the domain under what it calls the erroneous theory that defendants were inherently entitled to take the domain name because it included the word France. The action demands the return of the domain to Friedman and compensation for lost earnings during the period it was owned by the French government. This could be a significant fee, as the court documents claims the advertising revenue for the website ran into the millions of dollars per year. Friedman responded, I'm very confident and my lawyers are very confident. It's a very clear case of an expropriation that is totally illegal. Totally illegal, not just partially illegal, totally illegal. Well, what do you think? You think that one's got a chance?
That sounds a bit more like commercial, related to commercial activity. I kind of like that one a bit more.
Well, I've heard of people that have gone out and bought up sites because they thought somebody would want them and somebody would pay for them. Right. And I guess they passed something that said you can't really do that, didn't they?
They did.
But this is a little bit different. If this guy worked with the French government for 20 years and was promoting France and it was all positive, I mean, it'd be one thing if you went to France.com and there were like penises wearing French hats or something like that. I can understand how France would get upset. But if it was stuff promoting the country and stuff like that, then, you know, he was working for them.
Hey, those are baguettes. They're not penises.
That's what you call a small one, a baguette. And the people in France would go to France.com and they'd open it up and they'd say, Socle bleu! It's a penis! I believe it's a penis!
And that's going to bring us to
Legal Breeze. You held that legal too long.
I did.
Yeah.
I got good lung capacity.
Yeah, you got to watch my lips when you do that. That's what I'm watching yours to go to brief. So you watch the mouth. I have to look up that furry tunnel to see your mouth, but I'm trying.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy about different legal terms we discussed and see if he can remember what they mean.
I hope so.
What does parens patriae mean?
Father of our country.
Literally translated, it means parent of the country.
Parent of the country. And it's close.
It's the theory that the government uses when they sue on behalf of different constituents to make sure that their rights are not trampled upon.
That's what Missouri is using to sue on behalf of Missourians.
That's right. And what is gravamen?
Gravamen means the seriousness of the situation, how important it is in this, how important that part of the statement is. The most important part.
That's right. So, for example, if I was suing you because if I said you recklessly, with disregard for safety, operated your vehicle on a state road, and while doing so, ran into my car, causing injury, what do you think the gravamen of that complaint would be?
The reckless part.
Well, it'd be that you wrecked your car into mine.
Oh, that's, okay.
Just simply put, that's the gravamen of the complaint. You wrecked your car into mine.
The reckless part was hearsay. It wouldn't be admitted.
No, it was probably well-founded. I've seen you drive before.
Hey, I protest that. I declare sovereign immunity from you. You're at your house and I'm at mine. I don't have to hear that.
We're gonna strike that from the record. What does AG stand for?
Attorney General or aspiring governor.
That's right.
I knew it was something governor. I was trying to think of the A word for it. I can think of an A word for a governor, some of them.
There's an A word for politicians.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me what sovereign immunity is?
Sovereign immunity means basically it says we're another country and you can't sue us unless we let you.
That's right. It means the government has some sort of immunity where they can't be sued civilly or criminally. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean a foreign country because different states and federal government here in the U.S. alone can have sovereign immunity too. So it's not just because of being outside the country. So
one state can't sue another state or something?
Well, they can, but there's different
criteria has to meet.
Different criteria, different limitations on it. You just can't do anything. And last but not least, we've talked about this on several occasions. What is subject matter jurisdiction?
Subject matter jurisdiction means that you have to have jurisdiction over this particular subject that you're suing for.
Yeah, that's pretty much right on. It's the power. it's the power.
I just reworded the question.
It's the power or ability of, well, I mean, hey, if it works, it works. It's the power of the court to hear a certain type of case. So if you're trying to sue somebody for a divorce in like circuit court, you're in the wrong court. There's no subject matter jurisdiction to hear a family law case in a circuit court. So that court wouldn't have subject matter jurisdiction to hear that.
You need to go to a family court.
Exactly, in that instance.
I see.
So the way the FSIA relates is that if one of the exceptions does not apply, the court does not have subject matter jurisdiction to hear it. They don't have the ability to hear it. They can't do it.
Okay.
So, well, that's going to do it for Legal Briefs.
Well, all right. Well, I was fairly mediocre on that.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching your lips move.
Yeah, I was reading from my notes.
Well, I think you did pretty well. I mean, you got aspiring governor. That was the fun one I threw in there.
That was a fun one, huh?
Yeah. So.
Well, I bet you that France.com is going to get a spike in their viewings. Now everybody's going to run there to see the French penises on the website.
Yeah. You don't want to see London. You don't want to see France. You might end up losing your underpants.
That's right. That's how come you see their penis.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out there, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, and welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is news in a pandemic. How much news is too much news? Is there anything else going on in the whole wide world? Seems there is nothing happening that isn't coronavirus. What do you believe? One channel says one thing, and another says just the opposite. For every medical expert that comes on and says, "We can't open up too soon, or there will be a terrible spike in cases," there is another that says, "The longer we wait, the more economic destruction and depression and suicide will take place for years to come." What do we do and who do we listen to? I mean, the way our governor summed it up is when asked about whether he should open up the state, he said, "I'm dadgummed if I do and I'm dadgummed if I don't." It was a very succinct and wise way to put it. It's a tough time and a once-in-a-lifetime situation. No one on this planet has any experience in dealing with this type of thing firsthand. There have been smaller outbreaks of other diseases, but nothing to match this. So now, all we can do is run models and predictions based on algorithms of if this, then that. But nobody knows, and most of our warnings are overkill. But that is to also say they err on the side of caution, which is understandable. Do you remember just a few weeks ago they said the peak is coming, and it will be horrible. If we do well, we may only have 200,000 deaths. While we are nearing the 50,000 mark, which is terrible, it is nowhere near the 200,000 people death estimate. So now, when they say, if we go back out now, we will see large spikes and hospitals will be overwhelmed, well, that was the whole need to go on lockdown, so hospitals wouldn't be overwhelmed. Except for maybe New York and New Jersey, they didn't get overwhelmed. We didn't need all those ventilators. We had everybody making. In our area, the hospitals were practically empty. One had to lay off 1,000 employees because there was no one coming in, and another cut back most staff to 50%. We had more open hospital beds during this time than we have during non-pandemic times. It is all very confusing to a non-scientific guy who just reads and listens to all the news stories, weighs them against their politics, and then tries to combine them into some kind of reason and make my own predictions. On the second day of this lockdown, back in mid-March, I told my wife, "They can't do this for more than a week or so, or people will start protesting and rioting." Sure enough, last week, they started protesting and rioting. Once again, I will caution that I am not a very smart guy. So don't change your COVID plans on what I say. But here are my own personal predictions based on what I have read and seen. Number one, the virus is far more spread than anyone has predicted. It was here and active before we ever took any steps or did anything to prepare. Therefore, it penetrated our population much further than we know yet. Number two, antibody testing is more important at this point than virus testing. Not having the virus can change daily, but having the antibodies that show you've already had it is there to stay. Number three, the plasma therapy, which is a past proven procedure, is becoming more prevalent, and this will help stop the worst of the symptoms until we can get a vaccine. If you stop the worst symptoms, you stop the mortality from it. This is also why antibody testing is so important. The larger the number of people that have them, the larger the supply of donors to treat those with severe symptoms. Number four, All this being said, I don't feel there will be a large second spike as we open up. Sure, there will still be cases of various degrees, from no symptoms to mild to severe. But as long as it doesn't overwhelm the hospitals, and we have plasma therapy for the severe cases, it will not be as bad. In conclusion, let's be careful, but let's get back to work and our American way of life before lockdown kills us all. I know a lot of people will disagree with me, but I think we have flattened the curve, and now we need to get back to work before we all lose everything we have worked for our entire lives. I'm willing to take my chances. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.